The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
This is Bill Press and Friends on the District Productive Network.
We have a Treasury Secretary-elect. There are many problems with this guy. One problem is he's Wall Street. He is big time Wall Street. We'll get into that in just a minute. Another problem, of course, as a Wall Street executive, his agenda ain't going to be what's good for you and me. It's going to be what's good for him and his fellow billionaires of Wall Street. And the third thing is, and maybe we start here, nobody knows how to pronounce his damn name. Okay. First of all, I think what happened is his parents were drunk when he was born, and they didn't know how to spell. They misspelled their last name.
Yeah.
On the birth certificate.
It looks like someone was typing and actually hit a few too many letters.
Yeah. And then he got stuck with the name. So they made a mistake, and he got stuck with it. He's been stuck with it all his life. It's MNUNCHIN. How do you pronounce it? Well, Bloomberg said, well, we'll find out how to pronounce it. We'll just find out how news anchors pronounce it because they know what they're doing, right? That's how we get our news.
Yeah, totally.
So that's how we'll learn how to pronounce the name. And they'll all pronounce it the same way, right? Here we go.
Today, Trump is expected to pick Stephen Mnuchin.
Former Goldman Sachs executive Stephen Mnuchin.
Mnuchin led Trump's finance operations during the presidential campaign.
Among them, Stephen Mnuchin as Treasury
Stephen
Secretary.
Stephen Mnuchin? Stephen Mnuchin.
I love the Mnuchin, right?
Oh, boy. Bill, I hate to do this, but I left one out.
Billionaire Steve Mnuchin to...
No. He got you too?
I'm sorry.
I think it is Mnuchin.
I don't know how you say it.
I thought it was Mnuchin.
I think it's or Mnuchin.
I'll tell you. You could think. I think Reince Priebus knows how to pronounce his name. I'm going to go by Reince Priebus.
What Reince says.
After all, he's the chief of staff.
Yeah,
that's true.
So here's Reince Priebus yesterday.
Well, Steve is going to be lockstep with the vision of Donald Trump and Mike Pence. I mean, there's just no question about it. They wouldn't be offered a position if they didn't follow suit with the exact things that President Trump wanted. In fact, Steve Mnuchin.
There it is.
Mnuchin.
I think that's right.
Mnuchin.
Okay.
Mnuchin. Because the N, it's the...
Mnuchin.
Mnuchin.
And we get to keep the chin. It's like, you know,
Mnuchin.
Mnuchin.
Well, Donald Trump, of course. As many chins as he can have around.
Mnuchin. Okay. All right. But let's go back to the Mnuchin. Yes, indeed. You know, we start there with what we're seeing out of the Trump cabinet, or inside the Trump cabinet. Which is really kind of troubling, and I would say already a classic betrayal of Donald Trump for those people who voted for him. Not for those of us who knew he was a phony, but for those 62 million people who believed in him. Donald Trump is just proving to be exact opposite of what he pretended. Because remember, he pretended for like 15 months or so, right, to be the friend of every man, the friend of the little guy, the friend of the working class, an economic populist. I mean, you would have thought sometimes listening to Donald Trump, you were listening to Bernie Sanders. I'm going to fight for the little guy. I'm going to take on Wall Street. I'm going to raise taxes on the rich. They may not like it, my friends, but I'm going to raise taxes on the rich. I'm going to drain the swamp of the corporate elite who are running this country and put people who are connected with real Americans in charge. We're going to turn things upside down. That was Donald Trump's promise. You heard it. I heard it. Unfortunately, 62 million people heard it and believed it, because now we know, and by the way, you know, a lot of people, including me, told you so during the campaign. It was totally phony. I mean, seriously, how could you trust a guy who lives in this incredible palace on top of Trump Tower in New York? I mean, you've seen the pictures of his presidential suite up there. It's not the president, but his penthouse up there. Mm. Now it's going to be the presidential suite. But the guy who flies his own 757 with his name all over it up to a campaign event and then stands in front of his plane.
Man of the people.
The guy who says he's worth $10 billion. You really, really think that he cares a damn about average Americans or has any idea what their situation is like, what their life is like, how difficult it is at the end of the month where they got to pay the bills and still put food on the table and buy their kids' clothes and try to get their kids into college? He has no idea. But we told you that all along. But at any rate, we know the whole thing now was phony because so he's elected. And what does he do? He turns around. Who does he choose around him in his cabinet? Fellow billionaires. Started off with Betsy DeVos as education secretary, by the way, who's totally against public schools. Right? She's the enemy of public schools. We've got to get Randy Weingarten in from AFT soon to talk about that. At any rate, she's worth, according to Forbes, $5.4 billion. And now for Treasury Secretary, yes, Steve Mnuchin. Where's he come from? Wall Street. Who's he going to be in charge of? Wall Street. Who is he going to favor? Wall Street. Not Main Street, Wall Street. And he's already said it. This is a guy, he was 17 years executive of Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs, right? One of the biggest banks, one of the biggest collections of people who took advantage of the, who got us into the crash of 2008 and then took advantage of it to take all that government money. Goldman Sachs rules yet again. And all this time, and what's his agenda? His agenda, like Donald Trump's taxes. And by the way, he's joined by another billionaire, the new Commerce Secretary to be, Wilbur Ross Jr., who says that he thinks the 1% have been picked on for political purposes. And so what are they, but what's their agenda for both of them? Another big tax cut for the rich, which means you and I will pay higher taxes. They will continue to pay lower taxes, lower tax rate than you and I. Lower tax rate than you and I pay. So the point is, and Elizabeth Warren made this point last night on CNN with Anderson Cooper, Donald Trump is once again turning the whole government over to Wall Street. Here's Elizabeth.
He said he was going to separate that from the government, no more revolving door. He wasn't going to do that sort of thing. And then what does he do? He turns around and picks a guy who had actually been one of the people who helped do all of those lousy mortgages that not only broke the economy, but broke millions of families. And then after the crash, a guy who turned around and bought a bank that then became infamous for how hard it squeezed families that had already been cheated and was the foreclosure machine following that.
Yeah, and as Elizabeth says, basically, Donald Trump just said to Steve Mnuchin, okay, here are the keys to the car.
Yeah.
The American economy, you drive it.
The American people are furious over what Wall Street has done. They don't want somebody who's going to come in here and say, hey, let's help Wall Street. And what Donald Trump is doing is he's literally handing the keys to the Treasury over to a Wall Street banker who helped cause the crash.
Yeah, so there it is. Yeah.
That's a really valuable point that she makes, because when you look at how Donald Trump is going to govern and how he's sort of shown that he's going to govern, these cabinet picks are extremely important. Because as we've learned, Donald Trump's not a details guy.
No.
He's a salesman. I mean, he admits that. And his job is to go out and try and sell these ideas. But he's just going to let his cabinet members do whatever they want. He's not going to get involved in the details. So what you see at the top of these different departments, they're gonna run it however they want to. They're gonna follow directions from their president.
And here's the other thing is that really makes this more offensive than ever, which is of course the whole theme of Trump's campaign, right? You can't trust Hillary Clinton because she's the senator from Wall Street. She was the senator from New York. She raised all this money from Wall Street. She gave all these speeches to Goldman Sachs and got $250,000 or more for all these speeches. So she's in the pocket of Wall Street, and she will turn the economy and the government over to Wall Street, right? Well, I'm not defending Hillary's speeches. You know that. And it is true that Hillary's got too many buddies on Wall Street, but I got to tell you something else. Hillary would not have appointed a Wall Street executive as a Treasury Secretary. She's smarter than that, and her values are better than that, and her progressive agenda is better than that. She's for real. Donald Trump is not, and he's proving it. Hillary would not have turned the Commerce Department over to Wall Street as well. Yeah, she had a lot of friends there, but it turns out the one who is really Mr. Wall Street, the one who is really anti-working class Americans, and he proves it by these two picks, of course, is Donald Trump. But what do you want? Look at country clubs. Look at Mar-a-Lago. Do you think any people on the minimum wage, do you think any middle class Americans making 40 or 50 grand spend a vacation at Mar-a-Lago? No. It's a little club for billionaires. Right?
Yeah.
Just like Trump Tower or the Jean Georges restaurant is a club for billionaires, and now the Donald Trump cabinet is a club for billionaires. A billionaire surrounding himself with other billionaires who don't care about the American people. That's what we got. How do you like that economic populism, the 62 million of you who voted for Donald Trump? Well, now the scene will soon change to a new administration and a new Republican-controlled Congress. But Donald Trump is not going to get everything he wants, certainly, out of that Congress, because the Democrats are going to hold the line wherever they can. And we're so happy that one of them, in leading the charge against a Trump agenda, unless it turns out to be good for the American people, which is unlikely, is our good friend, who is now the ranking Democrat on the House Budget Committee, Congressman John Yarmuth from Kentucky, Kentucky's 3rd District, who joins us on our news line this morning. Congressman, congratulations. Good to have you back.
Thank you, Bill. It's good to be with you. It's quite an honor, and you know, I've had the privilege of serving for the last few years with Chris Van Hollen, who's moved on to the Senate. Chris has been a great ranking member, so I learned a lot sitting next to him, and look forward to this next session, because unlike the last few years when what we were doing was kind of moot because whatever the Republican budget came out of the House, if in fact it did, then it wasn't going anywhere because of President Obama in the White House. And but this time the budget has real potential to be enacted, and if it's anything like what we've seen over the last few years, including the Ryan budget, which was so politically toxic that Mitt Romney had to repudiate it when Ryan was his running mate in 2012, you know, we're going to have the opportunity to demonstrate the stark contrast between a party that wants to invest in the American people and a party that wants to invest in the top 1%.
The big news in the House yesterday, among Democrats, of course, was the vote for leadership. Were you surprised by the strong showing of Leader Pelosi to hold on to her position, or by the strong showing of Paul Ryan as a challenger? Tim Ryan, sorry.
Tim Ryan. I really wasn't surprised at the outcome. There is a considerable amount of sense in the caucus, far more than one-third, that we need to go in a different direction. That different direction doesn't necessarily need a new minority leader. And I think that's what you saw. You saw people who still have confidence in Nancy Pelosi, but you saw a significant amount of people who want to do some things differently, changes in the caucus structure. Leader Pelosi has embraced a lot of those. One of those we're going to vote on this morning calls for an election of the head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee rather than just an appointment by the leadership. So I think she certainly has sensed that we need to make some changes. We need to provide opportunities for newer members, fresher faces, and that's what we're going to do.
With events yesterday down in North Carolina and South Carolina, it's good to have Debbie Hines with us, our own legal analyst and trial lawyer. Hello, Debbie.
Hello, Bill. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Always good to see you. Not such good news to start off with today, perhaps. Down in Charlotte, North Carolina, it was the Mecklenburg County District Attorney Andrew Murray who made an announcement yesterday related to the death a couple of months ago of Keith Lamont Scott, shot by Officer Vincent there in Charlotte, as his late girlfriend, I think, not his wife.
His wife.
Sitting alongside of him in the car, pleading, that video, this is so hard to watch, pleading with the officer not to shoot her husband. Here's Andrew, District Attorney's announcement yesterday.
Their recommendation was unanimous. That bears repeating. 15 career prosecutors, and their recommendation was unanimous.
Unanimous not to press charges against Officer Vincent. Andrew Murray saying, in fact, he has concluded.
It is my opinion that Officer Vincent acted lawfully when he shot Mr. Scott. He acted lawfully.
Because he said there was a gun and the gun was found on the scene, did he make the right decision?
No. If you listen to the video of his wife, of Keith Lamont Scott's wife, who was outside the car recording the video, she's letting the officer know that her husband has a traumatic brain injury. She's letting him know there's issues, that there's mental health.
This is not the one we're sitting alongside in the car. I confused that. Right.
Yeah,
there
comes so fast.
This is the wife.
Right. Exactly.
He's in the pickup truck.
She's out the car.
Sorry.
She's trying to negotiate between the officer and her husband. She's telling him, Keith, get out the car. Do not let them break the window. She's at the same time as letting the officer know he has a traumatic brain injury, and she's just pleading with the officer. And she's really relatively calm when she's talking through the video. So
there's
no reason for the officers to have shot him. He should not have been in fear. Of course, that's what he would have said, is that he was in fear. And in most other instances, I hate to say, when there have been white individuals that have been involved, the police can do a standoff for 4 to 6 hours when the people are involved. But somehow, when it happens to be a black individual, they're just get, you know, gun happy and shoot the individual. So I do think that they should have proceeded with charges.
Yeah. Was this a grand jury or a panel of prosecutors who...
You know, I...
Because he said 15 career prosecutors.
He said 15 career... prosecutors, so he didn't go into detail. So here's what I don't know what happened. So I don't know if they just decided not to take it before a grand jury, which is their right. I mean, he's not saying it was decided by a grand jury. So I don't know for sure, and he's not giving us at this point any other information. But from what he's saying in the tape, it's sounding like he discussed it, you know, with other career prosecutors in the office. And you have to also understand that in that county and that prosecutor's office, that's the same case that came out of with the victim was Jonathan Farrell, where they did bring charges and a jury was unable to convict. It was a hung jury, and then they decided not to prosecute again. So they've kind of got like a little history going on. And I'm sure that in terms of, you know, the prosecutors that are involved, they're kind of thinking back on that case too, which they should not.
Right. In this case, what about the fact, if we can play that next clip, Jamie, where Murray says, you mentioned the gun, and the gun was found at there was some confusion in the beginning, remember, in the video as to whether or not there was a gun on the ground or kind of whatever. Wherever the gun was found at the scene. Here's Andrew Murray again.
Mr. Scott's gun, a Colt 380 semi-automatic, was recovered at the scene. It had one round in a chamber, the safety was off, and the gun was cocked.
Does that indicate he was about to use it against one of the officers?
You know, I just go with what the wife's video is, and there is no indication of anything in her video. And like I said, and she's right there at the same time and moment and pretty much trying to maneuver between the two of them. And there's no instance. So I kind of feel that if he had had a gun and it had been cocked, I mean, the way she was describing in the video, she would have said, Key, put the gun down, because she was basically pleading with him to get out, to get out of the vehicle. And we've honestly have seen from the other cases, Walter Scott's, which I know we may get to, the South Carolina case, where the officer tried to plant the taser. So I'm not saying that Mr. Scott didn't have a gun. It is a question of whether the question is whether the officer was in fear for what he may or may not have been doing with the gun.
Right, and whether there was any other way to subdue him or to bring under control rather than...
Exactly, in light of the injuries that he had.
Hey, everybody, this is Bill Press. Thanks for listening to the Bill Press and Friends podcast. And now, do yourself a favor. If you haven't already done so, subscribe to the show on iTunes. Here's what you do. Just search for The Bill Press Show. Then you can take us with you and listen in anywhere you go. And you'll get new shows from us as soon as they're posted. And one more thing. If you really enjoy Bill Press and Friends, please help us grow by telling a friend, writing a review, and giving us a rating on iTunes. It's so great to have you on board. Many thanks. We welcome a good friend of the program, director, communications director for Every Voice, driven to get the money out of politics and get people back in charge, Adam Smith. Hello, Adam. Good to see you.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's take a look at Stephen Mnuchin, Adam. He is... just the latest member of the little bunch of billionaires that Donald Trump has turned to and handed the keys of the government over to.
Yeah, he's a former Goldman Sachs exec. He foreclosed on a bunch of poor people, hedge fund manager. And you know, an important point here is he was also Donald Trump's fundraiser. So he was the finance chairman of his campaign. And so, you know, Donald Trump spent the entire campaign saying, I'm not going to be beholden to big donors or powerful, but he hires the guy who did all of his fundraising for him. And that's not the only member of his cabinet that's a problem. You know, his choice for commerce secretary is this guy, Wilbur Ross, another billionaire, who maxed out to Donald Trump's campaign, held a fundraiser for him at his home in the Hamptons, and then donated $250,000 to the RNC this cycle.
Drain the swamp.
I mean, he's filling it. It's overflowing. And then Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, speaking of pronunciations,
I pronounce it? It's pronounced Mnuchin.
Mnuchin. you know, I think she was something like the 65th biggest giver to all GOP politics in 2016.
By the way, married to the son of the founder of Amway.
Yes.
Talk about a scam.
Right, who was Eric Prince? Or isn't there? I think there's an Eric Prince connection to the Davos family, the DeVos family too. Yeah.
Oh.
There's a Blackwater connection. And then Deputy Commerce Secretary is going to be Todd Ricketts, whose family funded a pro Donald Trump super PAC.
Who owns the Chicago Cubs?
Yes. Donald Trump
another
actually got in a fight with
in
the primary and said they better watch out. So then they watched out by giving him money. And he's hiring all these super rich people, even Elaine Chao for labor secretary. Her family, she's the heiress to a shipping fortune, right? Like, these people are all super rich people and that are going to, I mean, help each other and while hurting everybody else.
Right. And this is a guy who campaigned as economic populist, almost like a Bernie Sanders message, right?
Absolutely.
I'm going to turn on Wall Street. I'm going to raise taxes on Wall Street. I'm going to take power away from the corporate elite who've been running it so far. And the reason you have to vote for me and not Hillary, because she's the one beholden to Wall Street. She's the Wall Street, the senator from Wall Street.
Right. And you think about during the convention when, like, Ted Cruz spoke, and then there was this these like people screaming about Goldman Sachs and Heidi's like connections in the loan, like, at the Republican convention. And here we are hiring people from Goldman Sachs to be in his cabinet.
Right. Elizabeth Warren with Anderson Cooper on CNN last night, A360, talking about, again, Donald Trump betraying the very promise he made to the American people.
He said he was going to separate that from the government, no more revolving door. He wasn't going to do that sort of thing. And then what does he do? He turns around and picks a guy
who had actually been one of the people who helped do all of those lousy mortgages that not only broke the economy, but broke millions of families. And then after the crash, a guy who turned around and bought a bank that then became infamous for how hard it squeezed families that had already been cheated, and was the foreclosure machine following that.
So if you really want what's wrong with Wall Street, these guys are the poster boys.
Yes, absolutely. They are, they're the ones that messed everything up, and they're the ones that are now going to be in charge of deregulating Wall Street to give the same banks that crashed the economy more power and all of that.
Wilbur Ross, I read last night, has been quoted as saying that he thinks the 1% have been picked on for political reasons.
Yep.
Of course, he's part of the 0.0001% probably. And therefore, they need another tax break.
Yeah.
Which is certainly, despite the original promise that he was going to raise money on the wealthiest of Americans, his new tax plan would do just the opposite.
And I'm sure it'll trickle down enough so that we reopen the coal mines in Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
Right. So the billionaire cabinet with their priorities, and which leads to the billionaire himself,
right,
Donald Trump, making, Adam, you must have been heartened to know that yesterday he promised he's going to hold a news conference 2 weeks from today where he's going to turn everything over to his sons.
Yeah.
Therefore, there will no longer be any conflict of interest at all with President Trump.
Yeah. Well, as soon as he put out those tweets yesterday, I said, people, don't fall for it. He is conning you. And a couple hours later, we learned that to be the case when Kellyanne Conway said, oh, you know, he's just going to give more of the power over to his kids, which was the point all along, which was his plan all along. And handing the businesses over to your kids isn't a blind trust. That's like a seeing trust. And, you know, especially with the close ties, how much influence his family has on the campaign, how much they have in the administration, he is doing nothing to stop these conflict of interest or prevent them from happening. You know, he is in debt $300 million to Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank is a German bank that has been recently in the crosshairs of U.S. regulators. I remember to pay my student loan payments every month, and they're a lot less than $300 million. I mean, he won't forget that he's in debt to them. And it really, so yesterday's announcement was a non-news item.
Yeah. And it does not resolve the conflicts at all.
Absolutely not. You know, whether it's the businesses, the buildings in India or Turkey, he has businesses in at least 20 countries that we know of.
Mm-hmm.
And unless he completely divests, puts them in actual blind trust.
Which is what I keep reminding people, the Wall Street Journal,
yes,
editorial page. Yeah. Recommended.
Yes, unless he does that and takes his kids out of the equation, there's going to be a cloud over his entire administration and every decision they make.
Everybody that I know has been asking me, all right, what do we do now? Even President Obama, in his interview with Rolling Stone, said we can't just crawl in a fetal position. We got to fight back, we got to organize, and we got to come back. What do we do? MoveOn.org's got the answer, and Ben Wickler, Washington director of MoveOn.org, is in studio with us to bring it to us. It's so good to see you. Hi, Ben.
It's great to be here.
I know we're all in, you know, in a period of mourning here, but we have to decide. Move on, right?
That's
move
exactly
forward.
Right. Listen,
right.
Remember before the election, President Obama said, don't boo, vote.
Yeah.
Now it's don't cry, fight.
There you go.
That's good.
This is
good.
It. I mean, everyone wants...
People feel that way, too.
People right? do. There is this unseen, massive explosion of energy, of people coming out of the woodwork who want to get involved in the fight back against this guy. Normally after an election, you know, tempers cool, passions recede, people want to just, you know, go back to regular life. The election was too much. I remember, you know, for the 2 months before the election, everyone kept saying, I want this election to be over. But frankly, since Trump, you know, gave his victory speech, there has been this outpouring of people who want to do whatever they can. People are talking about moving to swing states. You know, people are talking about changing their jobs and careers. People are just talking about giving hours wherever they can to make a difference. There is this massive bolus of energy out there. And so the key thing now is to direct that energy into the fights where we can make a stand and actually win, as opposed to just chasing every shiny object that Trump throws our way.
I could not agree more. That's what our commonality, right? That's what we all have to agree on and get behind. But let's make that as specific as we can. One thing that I know a lot of people are excited about, I'm not sure that MoveOn.org is involved in this actually, is the Women's March on Washington, January 21.
Yeah, there will be, I'm sure, hundreds of thousands of MoveOn members there.
Yeah.
And, MoveOn staff will be there. People.
Are you supporting it? Are you involved in it at all?
We're plugged into it. We're not a central organizer. This was actually initiated by a group of people that were totally outside of the kind of infrastructure of official organizations. And now a number of major organizations are, in close contact with the organizers, helping them reach out and secure permits, figuring out, how to do the
crowd management. I've been trying to figure out, who's in charge of this event. It's such a great idea.
Yeah.
And it did just spring out
of... the woodwork. Yeah, right. I mean, I think it's an indication of the kind of energy that's out there. So, I'll be certainly marching on the 21st.
So will I.
We'll, as the kind of details of how to get involved emerge, if you sign up for MoveOn.org's emails, I'm sure we'll be circulating that info.
All right, and let me just put this word out, all right, also, because I know some of you are thinking about this right away. No. Carol and I do not have any more space on our floor for people to camp. I mean, seriously, from California, we already have, we've measured all the floor space.
Okay.
And every sleeping bag is accounted for. So maybe you have another friend here watching. So, and we'll be out there for sure. What else? What else? Tangible.
I'm going to focus attention on one giant key fight that is emerging that is something that nobody knew was on the ballot when they were voting, and that is Medicare. Now, Medicare, there are 55 million people who receive Medicare benefits. Every American benefits from this program, either because they're going to receive benefits themselves or because their parents or loved ones are getting healthcare through it and they don't need to pay for it themselves because of that. This is just a centerpiece of preserving the middle class in America.
And probably the most cost-effective government program of all.
Absolutely.
Ever.
And the most cost-effective healthcare program that we've got.
Yeah.
I mean, this
yeah.
beats the pants off of private insurance, Medicare. And the satisfaction rate is through the roof. I mean, this is a crown jewel in, what makes America strong.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump said on the campaign trail he wasn't going to touch it. But who is he appointed in charge of Medicare? A man who says he wants to phase it out in 6 to 8 months and replace it with a system of vouchers for private insurance.
Tom Price.
That's exactly right. And Paul Ryan... This has been a centerpiece of his Better Way plan for years.
Yeah.
Tom Price, literally, he was asked in an interview, when do you plan to do your Medicare privatization plan? And he said, so the next 6 to 8 months, probably over the summer. And now he's in charge of it. They are coming for Medicare. This is a fight that is going to happen. And the thing about this fight is that it is terrible politics for these guys. Because everyone actually loves Medicare.
Yeah.
This is something, that this only works if they can sneak it through. And they're planning to use what's called reconciliation, which means that they can do it just with
51 votes.
That's right. Just with Republican votes. But there is no way if we stand and fight, if we make this, a red line, if we demand that every Republican publicly state where they stand on dismantling Medicare, there's no way that we can't flip some of those votes.
Well, the last guy who tried to do this, I believe, was Newt Gingrich, who had the very same plan.
Yeah. Right?
Vouchers privatized.
How'd that go for him?
Yeah, right.
Right. I mean, right. So did they, the reason I raised that, did they learn anything then?
For a lot of people on the far right, Medicare is the thing they abhor most because it is a social insurance program that ties America together, that uses the government as an instrument for good. That is so totally against their philosophy. And they can't get it out of their minds that they got to knock this thing out. But this is just like when President George W. Bush in 2004, was elected. He had both houses of Congress. He was riding high. And in 2005, he tried to privatize Social Security.
Yes.
And
yeah.
progressives and, Democrats across the country organized the hell out of that fight.
Right.
And they laid out, they made the case and they demanded that Republicans, put up or shut up. And frankly, the Republicans folded. They just completely
They knocked
left the
it
stage.
Down and he never mentioned it again.
And not only that, that was the turning point in his presidency. Mm-hmm. I mean, after that, George W. Bush did not pass any crazy right-wing major policies through the Congress. That was the death blow to the entire kind of mega conservative movement, conservative operation that was trying to run, you know, run its way through the federal government.
And certainly the crash of 2008 didn't help, because people suddenly saw, oh my God, right, if all of my retirement money was there, right, no Social yep. Security, if I was just counting on investments that I had made, I'd be SOL.
That's right? Exactly right. And yeah. So this is a fight that, frankly, everyone can play
a
role in.
Yeah, you can say SOL. Okay. I can say SOL.
What does that mean?
I mean, shoot, out of luck. So this is, they will be shoot out of luck on trying to phase out Medicare. This is something everyone can get involved with, because everyone has a member of Congress. If you are represented by a Democrat and you're listening to this, you can call your member of Congress and say, put out a video defending Medicare, because that will be picked up by the press. If you're represented by a Republican, call your member of Congress and say, hey, where do you stand? Could you release a video? Could you meet with me and talk to me about this? Could you, you know, talk to the public at a town hall about Medicare? Show up for public events. Ask your member of Congress about where they stand on the Medicare dismantling plan that Paul Ryan and Tom Price have put forward. And, like, Republicans do not want to talk about this in public. They will duck and cover. But every time they open their mouth, it hurts the Republicans' chances. This is something that unites us and divides them. It builds our power and it reduces theirs. And it's the conversation we need to have right now. You know, it's both, like, exciting because we can be on the offense, but it's also deadly serious, because if we just, you know, if we get distracted by every flag-burning tweet that Donald Trump sends and we don't lift a finger to fight for Medicare, this is something that they have the institutional power to just ram through in the dead of night and, you know, profoundly affect the lives of every American.
Right.
The Parting Shot with Bill Press. This is the Bill Press Show.
Yep, we know that Donald Trump campaigned as an economic populist, but now we see that he is really not. Look at his cabinet. The billionaire has surrounded himself with other billionaires, as we've been talking this morning. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, worth $5.3 billion. Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, former Goldman Sachs executive, $5 billion. Wilbur Ross of Commerce, $2.9 billion. And, of course, maybe even Mitt Romney, who could end up at State, says he's worth $250 million, but probably worth a lot more. No, Donald Trump isn't taking on Wall Street. He is handing the government over to Wall Street, giving them the keys so that government of the rich, by the rich, and for the rich shall not perish from this earth. Hey, folks, have a great Thursday. We'll look for you again tomorrow.
This is the Bill Press Show.